Hey, Fred, give me a pizza with extra cheese.
Extra cheese.
And hold the tomato sauce.
Hold the tomato sauce.
And hold the crust.
Hold the crust. Hey, Jimmy, give me a cheese with nothing.
Nothing?
Now you can have the best part of the pizza without the pizza. Polio string cheese, all natural, individually wrapped cheese snacks.
Is this what you want?
Bellissimo. Magnifique.
C'est bon.
Try Polio string cheese. It's the best part of the pizza.
Somewhere out there, out where we'll come to.
Oh, well. That's a movie I haven't seen in quite a many years.
Yeah.
Do people still know
an American Tale?
American Tale? I feel like that's fallen through the cracks. That, Secret of NIMH, 5-0 Goes West, The Rescuers Down Under.
Who did the score for that American Tale? Someone big. I'm going to say James Horner.
Oh, I'm thinking of the song. I remember the song.
It was
like
the song
an
R&B.
It was like a back and forth. It was a duo doing it. Like, I want to say somebody like a Luther Vandross or somebody. And there was like, I forget who it was back and there was, it was a duet.
Yeah, James Horner. Good, great score to that thing.
Again, I haven't seen the movie in 40 years, but they're escaping the Russian freaking revolution, I think it was. You know, there's like death at the beginning, and they have to get on the ship, and they have to come over here, and they're mice immigrating, you know, and then coming through Ellis Island and having to deal with the problems of being an immigrant, you know, in New York City at the time. Wow. You know, a lot of heavy topics.
Fortunately, still maybe more relevant now than ever.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, the Statue of Liberty is new, or they're building it or something, and
it's
still
around
like
the time.
Coppery, petty color. It's not green yet.
Yeah, they're going through Ellis Island, coming here legally, and coming through and having to deal with the language barrier. I guess they didn't speak. Right, I forget.
It's all subtitled. Forget.
Yeah, they gotta go. They gotta go to the ethnic neighborhoods, you know, because everybody at the time. Secret. I mean, some of those movies back then. Secret of NIMH, Dark. When I was little, I used to do this. But nobody could see what I'm doing. But this was the thing that would talk to them when he was, like, in the bog. You know, it was like,
yeah, making some kind of face with his fingers contorted.
Yeah, and it was that reminded me that the eyes and the mouth reminded me of the thing that would talk to them that had the glowing eyes, you know, the glowing, you know. You think about the Watership Down, the other one, the company Watership Down did, the dog. Were there test dogs? I've never even been able to watch that, but it's animated. They're like, in the success of Watership Down, we'll do this one. And it was the dogs escape from a research laboratory, so they want to kill the dogs, so that these guys are running to kill the murder of the dog. And it's animated. It's like, you know, this crazy kind of movie. And then the only scene I saw was the guy's trying to shoot the dog with a shotgun, and the dog's wrestling with it, and the guy ends up blowing his own brains out with a shotgun.
Good old classic children's
animated. Yeah. I was like, you think about some of the really dark, I mean, you take like something like Bugsy Malone, which is just like a comedy, which is something I would love to do on the cast, Paul Williams score, and you got a young Scott Baio and Jodie Foster in the world of children gangsters with pie guns, the Thompsons that shoot pie, and the cars are all like just bikes, you know, they're all just pedaling, you know, and that's fun, and it's a musical, but then you got the heavy shit like... you know, the Lord of the Rings, like, isn't that all the rotoscopes, like Paul?
Oh, yeah, the Ralph Bakshi stuff, yeah.
Ralph Bakshi stuff, saying his name wrong. Batsky?
I think it's Bakshi, but somebody else, somebody's yelling at both of us right now.
Yeah, because we're saying, they say everything wrong, and it's, the problem is we don't have producers.
Crap, there's another.
We need to pay people.
There's another negative iTunes review.
I know. We don't have a third person there that's sitting there doing our research and talking to our ear, telling us like the info we need, like these other shows with these big budgets. But I mean, early '80s You got like, what else you got going on there? Certainly, like, there's heavy metal, but that wasn't really geared towards children. Or the other one, too. There's the other, what's the other crazy one with the bad guys that look like Nazis? They have, like, the helmets, but they're, like, on bugs flying around.
Wizards?
Wizards, that, thank you. We have that one, and you got, like,
This is like a game show.
Yeah. Next question.
I'm being tested. Yeah.
Name the movie. Pie Guns, Scott Baio, Jodie Foster singing
Bugs Malone.
We could have been anything that we wanted Johnny to be. No, close. But we took the easy way out. Bugsy Malone. Yes. Next question. Boom. I love that soundtrack. I could sing that soundtrack all day. And then, like, what, there's like, just, you think it's just a messed up. I mean, I don't know if you do that nowadays. It was really the core of the fairy tale. Like, you know, we talk about the Grimm's fairy tales. People used to write children's fairy tales to tell kids, learn, like, stories of you shouldn't wander in the woods. You shouldn't trust strangers. You could get eaten by wolves, or some woman will put you in her oven and eat you. And it's like, I feel like you take that to, like, a, you know, later 20th century, they're kind of doing that, like, these ultra serious heavy topics, you know, American Tale, where they're immigrating here and they're telling a story of the immigrants from 70 years ago and the struggles the families had to do coming to a new country for the American dream or a new life, or Secret of Nim. It's like the farmers are trying to eradicate the problem of the vermin on the farm, and then they're having to move, you know, the where they're living, which is the crate, and then there's evil rats and all, you know, it's like all this crazy shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things at play there. One, I think this stuff is being produced by a bunch of adults who maybe don't have the greatest grasp on what's appropriate. But two, I think in a lot of ways it is appropriate. I think you're right. I mean, I think we've lost, I don't want this show, this format of the show that we're doing to be like old guys complaining about when I was a kid.
No.
Kids these days. But I think there is...
It's turning into that a lot.
I think there is something to what you're saying. Like, I think the Grimm's fairy tales, like the dark side, the stuff that most parents today may deem inappropriate for kids, is an important part of child development. Like
teaching them in life.
It's teaching them lessons, but it's also teaching them how to deal with fear and being able to handle it and get past it and realize that it's a feeling, and but also the warnings that you're talking about, like not talk to strangers. I mean, think about all the movies in the 80s that we grew up with that dealt with like death. I mean, whether it's Never Ending Story with the horse, E.T., it's preparing kids for like the inevitable, you know? And yes, it was emotionally scarring for a lot of us, but it's also,
yeah, like, I remember driving home from the E.T., driving home from the theater. I don't remember seeing it, but I just remember coming home from the theater and my dad's like, he lived, because I'm crying, my brain's out. My dad's like, don't worry, he came back. I just couldn't, you know, I was so traumatized by E.T. dying.
Well, it's like, you know, not to associate this with Star Trek, but Star Trek V, the one Shatner directed, The Final Frontier.
Yeah, maybe The Final Frontier.
And Spock's half-brother has got a cult going, and they're trying to find God, quote unquote. But part of how Spock's half-brother ends up getting people to follow him is he uses his Vulcan magic to, like, take away everybody's, like, fear. You know, and then we have this very powerful scene. I actually really like Star Trek V. Star Trek V, people shit on it, but I think of all the Star Trek movies, Star Trek V feels the most like the original television show. And maybe someday we'll do an episode on it and we'll dive into that deeper. But there's like this scene where we're seeing everybody's moments of like Spock being his dad, like rejecting him for he looks too human or something like that. And I forget what Bones's, McCoy's thing is. Maybe someone dies on the table or something. And he's trying to do it to Kirk. And Kirk's like, no, I need my fear. It's who makes me what I am. You know, and there's a great speech that Shatner gives about I think it's fear. And I think that's part of it. Like all that stuff is a very important to development. And I think we were lucky enough, and I'm sure everybody thinks this of their generation and their upbringing. But I do think like we were, not only do we have the be born in the perfect moment for technology, to be able to watch movies on a VHS, to then be able to experience the internet for the first time, to be able to get the first smartphones. There was a major industrial revolution in the late, that started like in the late 70s that we were able to take advantage of as children. But we also got to take advantage of one, most of us, I would say, especially the people listening to the show, had parents that weren't ultra policing. Not just like, okay, kids, come back when the lights start, when the streetlights come on, you know, for dinner. Like, go off and have an adventure, like unchaperoned adventures. But I think both of us, like, our parents didn't do a whole lot of, like, policing what we watched, you know.
No, there weren't too much restrictions.
We watched a lot of adult stuff, but then also, like,
yeah.
At the time, like, as we just experienced, like I said, like, a lot of the children's programming was also pretty screwed up at that time. So we got to experience, like, all these weird things. And I feel I'm, like, very thankful for that, even if some of it has had lasting negative effects on me in some way. I'd rather have that than not have it.
But I wonder if some of the cynicism nowadays from the kids who are younger, who are now, like, in their 20s, they realize that, like, you know, like, ah, yeah, we didn't, you know, it's like part of that. It seems like there's been a whole kind of like sarcasm, cynicism that begets, like, I don't know, like a narcissism or an entitlement of like everything handed to them, that people complain about these generalities of complaints of the younger generations and stuff that people don't like because they were so heavily policed and so heavily, like, looked over and helicopter parenting. Well, when we didn't have that, again, as you said, when we were little, we were able to. The trend was to be able to go out on your bike, and we didn't have cell phones, and you can go have an adventure at the park, not, you know, be have our parents looking over our shoulder for the most part, unless you were doing something like a sleepover or something. But at the same time, you had another generation of storytellers who were experienced enough to be like, yeah, we're going to put this very adult theme in a children's context and let them deal with it to understand it, which maybe you don't get that. A lot of the watered-down, saturated content nowadays, I'm sure if we sat down and you gave me an hour to think about, I can maybe come up with like children's programming nowadays that I've seen that may have adult themes in it. But when we go back and talk about Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson Storytellers Hour with all those Greek and other fairy tales, the Shelley Duvall Fairy Tale Theater, and all the cartoons we've talked about already, or even the live action children's movies that were kind of messed up when we were little, like you said, Never Ending Story with Artex dying, and the Big Nothing and the Rat and hiding in the dark and stuff we weren't supposed to be watching, like Cat's Eye, or, you know, the stuff that we were exposed to. I don't know if the latter end of that is because of our parents' ignorance. They were, you know, because nowadays I always see, like, the parents just, they're busy and, you know, they're so taxed at being a parent. They're like, ah, here's my phone. And then you just see the kid gets on the phone and the kid just knows how to do it, and the kid's watching the tablet or the phone, and that's the babysitter. So I wonder back then that was the difference. It's like our parents are, all right, just sit them in front of the TV. Whatever's on's on. You know, when I got home from school, I would watch, you know, I could still tell you, like, you know, it was Pinwheel Today Special was on, Mr. Rogers was on, or G.I. Joe, Transformers, whatever. And then by that time, it's like dinner time, I'd go eat, and then I don't know if I would watch anything afterward. But it's like, so I wonder if that's because our parents were sitting us in front of the TV to be the, what now parents are doing by giving the kid the phone.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many, I hear people joking about under 30 or 35, like, you know, who even watches television nowadays? That's a, you know, unless you're some 80-year-old, you know, I'm like, well, I still watch TV, you know, and I know I'm probably in a minority, but, you know, I get my TV, as I always say, over the air on the aerial. So I love flipping around and watching television. I wouldn't want to have a life of just streaming wholeheartedly, which I think I might be in the minority, even of the audience listening to us here. You know, I like the spontaneity of seeing what's on and then seeing, oh, look at this. Is, you know, there's a channel called Movies with an apostrophe or an exclamation point. And they play stuff that, like, every day or every month they play some stuff I've never seen. And, like, they have, like, you know, it's Monster Month or it's Gangster now for Film Noir Sundays.
Just the other night they had a fantastic lineup of weird horror movies.
It's Monster February, Scary February. So it's like they have, like, Carnival Souls. Night, I mean, it's
not,
like, that.
Not a lot of thought put into that name.
Yeah, but it's something. It's scary.
Not Monster
they have
March.
Something that rhymes. Yeah, my, it's scary Monster, February.
It's Monster February.
Monster February. Frightening February or something. And all they've been playing is monster movies, except on like Thursdays and Sundays because they do like Sunday noir or Thursday noir, and they play some really great noir. Every movie's a classic. I watched a movie on there called Moontide, which I'd never heard of with our man Jean Gabin. Remember our old French Jean Gabin actor who's in like Le Jour se lève, or he's in maybe Grand Illusion. And Moontide had Claude Rains in it, a young Ida Lupino, and then Thomas Mitchell. People will know Thomas Mitchell probably best from he's the uncle in It's a Wonderful Life who's forgetful and loses the money. Yeah. He's like, George, I don't know where I put the money. And great, great movie. And it's like they play these great amazing movies that you never heard of that are just these taunt thrillers. I'm going down a rabbit hole. But it's like nowadays, welcome to Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers. I'm Dion Baia.
And I'm Jay Blake.
We're 15, 17, 20 minutes in. And I just feel like nowadays it's different. And yes, I do feel like I think it's more my doing than your doing. That we fall down the hole of I complain a lot about, like, you know, nowadays programming versus, you know, because there's a lot of new stuff I don't watch, but there's so much on. There was a time, you know, when I still watched, everyone still watched TV where I was trying to keep up with The Walking Dead. I was trying to keep up with this show or that show. And then I had friends at work who were watching everything. I'm like, where do you find time to watch 24 shows? And so at one point I just threw my hands up. Game of Thrones, I was like, I'm done with it all. You know, and now you kind of just pick what you want to watch. And there's so much on, I don't know, you know, and it's just too much.
I mean, I don't know. I'm an anomaly, I think, especially between us, anyway. Like, I do watch a ton of television shows, and I watch a lot of movies. I don't know where I find the time. Not only am I watching the older stuff that we have talked about, but I'm watching a lot of new TV, and I don't know if it's for the new year or maybe for Black Friday or Cyber Monday. There was a deal on BritBox for like 4 months, so I've been like getting through all the BritBox crime thrillers. I just finished
it's great stuff. Yeah,
Crime, starring Dougray Scott, which is a pretty intense two-seasoned Scottish detective show.
That's another thing. I remember 15 years ago or so commenting to friends like, boy, I wish I'd be able to get stuff a la carte. I hate having cable. So even now, like if you get Fios, I have to pay for a sports package just to get Turner Classic Movies HD. I'm like, why the hell do I have to pay for, if I don't want to watch sports, do I got to get 7 ESPNs? And I remember the old people who own this kind of thing would come in and I would chat with them at work and they would say, well, it's because a lot of people we know wouldn't get the stuff we want to send them. So we force you, we put popular stuff in with stuff that's not popular, and we throw it to you as a package so that people are forced to have the channels.
But if they don't want it, they're not going to watch it anyway. So the advertising is moot.
But they still have it though. But on the in the old days of, you know, cable, it's still now part of, you're still paying for the service because it's part of the package, you know. So I used to complain like, I want my stuff a la carte. I want to be able to go on and pick the channels I want.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, 15, 20 years later, we kind of are in that world, yeah, where you can pick what you want, but little do you realize that everything you buy is 10, 20 bucks.
Yeah.
So everything you're paying for, BritBox, Prime, Hulu, Disney Plus,
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Shudder, Netflix.
I still have cable. I mean, I'm spending like $400 a month.
Yeah, it's expensive.
On entertainment.
No, but you don't, I mean, you living in the city, an aerial won't work for you?
It used to not. I don't know if it would now.
I wonder if you tried getting a different one or just putting it out on your patio or your balcony or trying. Yeah. There's nothing on top of the, you don't have a coaxial on the wall to go into an aerial on the building, on the roof. That's a shame.
You get some channels, but last I did it, but you know, I didn't get a lot of the stuff wouldn't come in. You should
try.
I should set it up for at least in the bedroom just to see what's on there now. Like I don't get MeTV Plus.
Oh yeah, you should, because you're closer to it than I am, because it's coming from New Jersey and you're high enough. What I would do for you is try different try different antennas. Yeah. Get Amazon, get like, you know, one or two different antennas. You know, unpack them, plug them in, see if they work. If they don't work, send them back and try a different one, because you're gonna find a one that works. You know, especially where you are, you're in a skyscraper in Manhattan. You know, that sounds like a TV movie right there. The skyscraper.
The skyscraper in Manhattan.
Yeah. Who's watching what's happening in the skyscraper? So.
I got enough on it. Even on the tangent show, we went off on a tangent. We're talking about children's programming.
Yeah, we're 20 minutes in. So tell, you want to explain to people who are tuning into this what we're doing if they haven't read the title already and are wondering, like, they never heard of the movie called The Tangent or The
yeah.
The Digress? So,
if you didn't listen to the last episode, in a nutshell, we're experimenting with a new format where we just hit record and we talk for an hour or so. Basically, it's our regular show minus the movie. One of the several reasons we had to slow down with our regular show was that's just, it's really labor intensive and time consuming. So we thought if we didn't have to do the research for the movie and watch the movie, then maybe we could just talk. And so you're being, you're privy to the kind of BS Dia and I talk about when we're not recording.
You're the guinea pigs.
And this is basically what Dion and I would be doing anyway. So we decided to hit record for the people that who message us and seem to want more content. And we're giving it a try. It's an experiment. We'll see if it lasts. We'll see. I'm sure if it does last, I'm sure it'll evolve into something maybe a little more structured. Who knows? But for right now, we're just talking. And if you're a person that doesn't love Dion's and my banter, then I'm sure you've already turned this off. You wouldn't have waited for 20 minutes before. But if you are, then welcome. And welcome to whatever this show is called. We haven't decided what to title it yet.
The side chat. The talk around. This is, yeah, it's not for everybody, but we're just throwing it out there and seeing what's going on.
And we'll see. Maybe nobody will listen to it. Or maybe people will message us and say, this is horrible. And then we don't have to do it anymore.
Who knows? Or maybe we'll never meet again. Yeah. So, believe it or not, we do get a bunch of messages from listeners who do enjoy the back and forth because they feel like, you know, we have a good chemistry and they feel like they're talking with friends. So it's kind of like you're, you know, coming over to watch a movie, but then you end up talking too long.
Yeah.
And you realize it's gotten too late to watch the movie.
It's actually kind of like, ironically, a little inside baseball. One of the reasons towards the end of when Dion and I were doing it regularly and then we took that big break is that I got really disgusted with myself. About I started to realize, like, who cares what I think about anything? Like, why do I feel a need to get on a microphone and talk to people about stuff? And I started to really, I didn't like it about myself. And so I was wrestling with this, and it's one of the reasons why we stopped doing the show. And so the irony is, now we're doing this, and there's nothing educational about it.
We're just giving our opinion.
There's absolutely no reason for you to listen to this now.
No.
You're not even listening. We're not even talking about a movie you like or giving you any kind of information.
No, we're just ranting. We're just literally us, like, you know those, don't you hate using the bathroom? And the seat covers at a restaurant stick to your butt, or they flush down the toilet. You get it all ready, and then you turn around and pull your pants down. The automatic machine just flushes, and you lose the seat cover before you sit down. Don't you hate that?
So we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. But you know that you know more inside baseball, a little behind the scenes. You know, the thing that took the biggest hit when we stopped doing the show was that Dion and I like didn't talk for like 2 years.
when
we texted like a million times a day for all the years that we did the show, all of a sudden we just didn't talk anymore.
Well, it gave us a reason to hang out because it got harder. You know, we live in different towns now. We have different schedules. It was harder to get together.
Once we stopped doing having just sleepovers every other weekend.
Yeah. And then, you know, you know, I would go out and see Blake's music live when he played, and then, you know, that got harder to do with schedules. And then, I mean, then COVID hit, of course, too, and we weren't doing anything. And then it was harder just to do stuff, and then it just became show-driven. And then the relationship just became very business-oriented. Show, 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 show. you know, which kind of got annoying for us. And then it was just like, well, and then the only time we'd have catch up was the pre-banter. Yeah. And then I think that bled over into the record. We'd start recording, we were still catching up.
Yeah.
You know, enjoying each other's company. And then finally, oh, we got to talk about
this. And then an hour and a half later, we start talking about the movie.
Yeah. So let's talk about this movie, this obscure movie. You know,
so, talking about. You guys are kind of experiencing live to tape, Dan and I, just like hanging out the way the way we used
it
to.
It harkens back to the old episodes of us doing the sidecast on maybe even the Podwits, the old podcast show I had. Which is still up if people want to go check that out, Podwits. But we would do sidecasts where we would go to like a Chinese restaurant. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And we would have a topic and we would just be like, let's talk about sci-fi movies. And that was kind of, which people, regular listeners of the show will know, that was kind of the genesis device of this show, was that we started off just turning our records on, let's talk about something. And at first it would be nothing, and then we said, you know what, maybe we should have general topics, so we do. Let's talk about novelizations or photo novels, time travel, best horror movies.
Let's get to the bottom of time travel.
Let's get to our favorite time travel level. Let's talk about the veracity of Time Cop. Is that really as believable as you think it is? Can Van Damme do a split like that? And then that turned into like, you know, giving it what we wanted. But except we were doing it still podcast style. If we'd gotten on the basement, started this in 2014, and we're doing this to YouTube like so many people are doing now, I think we'd have a much better audience or following, because all this stuff, we're not on YouTube yet. We're still just doing podcasts.
We're old school.
We send, you know, it's like we're so old school that we send cassette tapes out to you. And
mail
I would
order.
Do that because I still have a cassette tape. So you know what? If people start liking this and this becomes a thing, I would be completely into if people wanted to, I don't know if we, how we would work this out. If everyone gave us $5 or something and we got a budget together but that would involve us doing the Patreon again, which we started a little bit, but I would be completely into us sending, I don't know how many tapes out.
Flip the tape halfway through the episode.
Yeah. Flip the tape halfway over. Turn the tape over now. Beep.
I was watching an episode of Tattletales.
Okay.
The 70s game show, for anybody that doesn't know it. Quote unquote.
What's his name?
Burt Convy.
Yeah, Burt. Hey, gang.
And yeah, it was Convy. Like celebrity couples, and sometimes it's like reality show TV, celebrity this, celebrity that. Sometimes celebrity is a loose term, but often it was like celebrity couples would come on. And they would answer questions about their relationship, kind of. And the brilliant thing about the show was, you know, whoever they would raise, they would get money. The points would be, you know, a dollar a point. But then whatever section won, there was a red section, a green section, or a blue section, and a yellow section. The people who sit in that section would get. The money would be split up. So it's like, here, you get like $3 after you split it all up between like 100 people. But anyway, so I was watching one and William Shatner was on with his old wife, Marcy.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the beginning of the show, they would say promote stuff. And like, oh, Bill, you have an album out. And he's like, yeah, it's William Shatner Live. And if you want a copy, you write to P.O. Box, you know, 7222, Burbank, California. And I was like, just write? What, you write a letter and say, I want one? Like, how does that work? There's not even like a phone number. It's like you write.
You send a postcard.
You send a postcard. Like, I would like one. I guess cash upon delivery, I would assume. I don't know.
What do you call that? What was that called? No CODs, cash on delivery. CODs. I don't mean this. I'm going to pause this for a second. I've got the TV on in the background, and Heroes and Icons is on the channel, and MacGyver's on, and it's the episode of MacGyver. I just wandered in to where he discovers his friend has been killed by the gang, and he discovers him hanging with the Colombian necktie.
Oh, that's a tough episode.
And Mac just runs out of the room and punches a hole through the walls, crying. I was like, oh, my God, what a tough thing just to...
That is a cheer.
One of the most dramatic.
That is a cheer-inducing episode, that one.
The Challenger gang or whatever the street gang it was. There used to be this... I listen to a lot of like old, of course I do, big band stuff, Sinatra, Tommy Dorsey. And it was interesting that one of the, when you listen to the live recordings of the Tommy Dorsey stuff, what the big band would, they had a contest where it was, do you think you can write a song? You know, write us a song and, give us the, it doesn't have to be on a sheet of paper. Just give us the lyrics and blah, 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 blah. And give it, what is it? Mail, you can go pick up a contest flyer at your local pharmacist, mail it away, and if we pick your song, the song is yours, but if we pick the song, you get the royalties and your pharmacist gets a prize. And that was like a thing they were doing. They had like, yes, Mrs. Joe Blow, housewife in Hoboken, New Jersey won, and this is her song, and it was like a good song. And it's like I heard somewhere, Ed O'Neill, I heard a story talk about that evidently, the story of Sinatra dumping, who did he dump? He dumped somebody for Ava Gardner. Was that his true love? Was that the girl that he dumped him? And then he did all the Mood albums in the 50s.
Yeah,
when he lost Gardner. Her. Yeah. Well, supposedly from Ed O'Neill telling this story is that, cause Sinatra recorded the song and his song's phenomenal. And it's a song of his you like.
It's on one of the Basie albums, I think.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You sent it to
me. Well, oh, I did. Okay, well, Ed O'Neill talks about that when he broke up with his wife or the girl at the time to go with Ava Gardner, some housewife was so upset she wrote on a napkin the lyrics to...
I want to be around.
I want to be around is pick up the pieces when someone breaks your heart, you know, like that. And his album, his cover of it on one of the Basie albums is incredible. You know, that's called Revenge is Sweet when I got a front row seat. But evidently it was about him and Ava Gardner breaking up. And she was so mad, she sent it away. And then somebody got it, opened the read it on the napkin. And then they called and they gave her a deal on the spot or something.
Yeah, it was like this housewife wrote this song and or a poem or something. And then a friend of hers read it and was like, you should send this to, you know.
Like a Sammy Kahn or something.
Yeah. You know. And so he sent it. She sent it. And he got it. I was like written on a napkin or something, and he called her and was like, "Yeah, it's good. I'll give you like 50%."
Yeah, we don't have to sign anything. It's a verbal handshake. I guarantee you, word is bond that you can. And she's like, "All right." And then that became the song. And so, back then they would do stuff like that. You know, if you want to send us a song, and you know we'll publish it and you get the publishing rights, you own the song, but we'll you know pay you royalties. So. It's going back to your Shatner thing where it's like, yeah, if you want something, send us a postcard, P.O. Box, you know, blah, 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 323245, New York, New York, 10036.
So, you know what I did the second he said
no.
that? I didn't write a letter, but I jumped on eBay and I bought a copy of the album.
What was the album?
It was like Shatner Live. I had a couple. I had a different Shatner Live album. And, of course, I had the famous one.
Is it him doing a spoken word?
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't listened to the new one that came in yet that he was offering via Tattletales. But yeah, I jumped online and I ordered a copy of it.
It's a stupid idea of mine because it won't go anywhere. But I've always wanted to hear these, whatever they are, and they give you these addresses, you know, and then they're like 50, 60, 100 years old. I still want to write. I want to still just send the postcard and see if somebody's there getting it. There's some old man waiting there. You know, I got the postcard. You know, you sent for the, you know, for the whatever, for the Mattel, for the refrigerator G.I. Joe, you know.
You know, I know I probably said this rant on the show before, but, you know, Shatner's delivery on that was a transformative man or whatever that first one is. Transformed Man, or
yeah,
which is now synonymous that he says the lyrics of the song to the music, and it's become like you know kitschy and fun and a joke and all that. Now he releases albums like that still,
which are good albums.
But you know, it was like a very definite concept. I think people
they forget that
don't realize what he was actually trying to do, which is that album had like sonnets from Shakespeare. Along with Tambourine Man, you know, and
Rocket Man.
Well, Rocket Man wasn't on that. I think he did that later. Yeah. But he did.
The idea was for him to do dramatic interpretations.
The idea was
these.
That, like, the poetry of the day, being the 60s, was the songs, where the songwriters, guys like Bob Dylan, they were the songwriters of the day. And so he was reciting them as poetry. It wasn't that he was trying to sing the song and he couldn't sing. He was reimagining them as poetry, and he's an actor, so he was acting.
Like a monologue.
It does. On that album has the Sinatra song, It Was a Very Good Year.
Yeah, yeah. When I was 17, it was a very good year.
So it wasn't that he was trying to sing those songs and be funny. It's that they were poets. He was poetry.
Yeah, he was trying to. It was a true example of a concept album.
Anyway,
yeah,
I just don't think that gets a fair shake.
No, and I think now that sadly, I think that's become fallen by the wayside, and people don't realize that what his true intention was to try to do something like that, which is sad because you know he knows what he was doing, and it's almost he put out one. Was it called Rocket Man? He put out one like I guess it's like 2012 or 13, and it's phenomenal. He does a cover of Twilight Zone, you know that tune? I'm stepping onto the danger zone. It's an '80s song. I'm stepping into Twilight Zone
by Golden Earring. I think it may be the band does Twilight Zone.
Do the close the dome to the Twilight Zone. Yeah, but it's like it. And it begins. It's like it's the hitman knew. I don't know the lyrics, which is, I wish I knew the lyrics. But he's like, yeah. But it's
I love that song, Golden Earring. Is an awesome band. Yeah.
But he's doing a dramatic interpretation. It's on that album. He does all, you know, he does like Space Oddity. It's all space related, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's funny because then you think about like, you know, a couple of years ago, he ended up going to space with the Elon Musk thing for like 90 seconds or 2 minutes. But it's like, it's all about that going to space and whatever. And, but he does that. And it's just such a great version of it. He's like, the hitman knows he was cheated. he's standing in the motel room. And, you know, the ways that he knows he's been cheated. I'll tell you, we're talking about things we're doing lately. And like a real guilty pleasure of mine, which I'm not even guilty about, is, you know, on a Saturday night, I'm watching MeTV. And I'm watching the entire lineup of MeTV. I mean, it becomes my Saturday night now is like getting ready at 8 o'clock, watching Svengoolie, which is the creature feature guy out of Chicago that's gone national. And then their whole lineup afterward, it's shows I just watch until like 4 or 5 in the morning. I mean, they're up until 6 having like Thunderbirds on at 6 in the morning, and I can't stay up that late. But I'm timer taping Thunderbirds because it's so awesome. But I finally embraced and actually really gotten into, after all these years, Batman 66. And it's something where, like, you know, they never played it in syndication for us when we were little. But then when the Tim Burton 89 Batman came out, I think like WPIX, the local New York affiliate, realized, you know what, we can make some money off this because we have all these things sitting in a vault. So they started playing the Batmans in syndication when Batman, the movie, was out, the Tim Burton movie. And, you know, I was like, yeah, it's kind of silly. It's, you know, it's kind of corny. I didn't like it. So for
but
all these years.
It was supposed to be.
Exactly. It was supposed to be. But I never fully embraced it. And then, you know, I read the 66 comic book they did, which I thought was phenomenal, the Batman 66 comic book. And I got the box set 1 year from Santa for Christmas, the Blu-ray of the, because then for so many years, it never came out on DVD. And it was because they were fighting over all the estates of all the people who were guesting on it. You know, there was a big problems with who was going to get royalties or what. And it even got to the point where Adam West had recorded commentaries for each episode because he was worried he'd pass away before they finally put everything out. But I think he was still alive when they finally put the box set out before he passed away. So I started watching them on MeTV because they were on. And it finally clicked in my head. And I don't know. Maybe it's the kid in me. But like I'm like 150% invested. I'm there. I'm like annoying my wife. I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen this week. But I'm pissed. Why do they keep letting the penguin out? Why don't they realize that the penguin running for mayor or having a restaurant is a bad idea? You know, and I think what really, for me, sells the show, least of all the talent. You know, you have such amazing actors in it doing stuff. And then there's cultural references, I think, that were going over kids' heads, that were going, you know, that were for the adults that you get if you know your history of the era. But it's like they're 100% committed to it. You know, Adam West, you know, everybody is just, there's nobody, everyone's giving their best. They're literally going into it. It's like Michael Caine doing the Muppets, Scrooge. He's like, yeah, I wasn't acting with puppets. I was doing Ebenezer Scrooge as Shakespearean, doing a play for a Christmas Carol. And that's how I feel with everybody there. And then knowing that, watching Frank Gorshin or Cesar Romero or, you know, Burgess Meredith, and certainly Adam West and Burt Ward. It's just incredible. I love it. Every week I'm so into it, you know. And then to think that, like, back then it aired like twice a week.
Yeah.
So how cool was that in its prime, where it's like stay up to tomorrow because you're literally going to watch later in the week what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Great cliffhangers.
It really was like the next night it was on again, which like.
Yeah.
And I don't think people today, I mean, I might not realize, like, it was must see TV. Like it was. Yeah. I mean, he was on Life magazine. You know, my stepdad talks about he was in college when it was on, and it was like every night, like his frat house got together and they sat down and they watched Batman together.
It was, it's weird because it's like it gets into that era of, you know, the monkeys and all that kind of, like, I'm not into that. Like, I can't do a lot of the episodes of the monkeys when there's a montage of just people running around to music. And, it's like that.
I love the monkeys and I grew up watching reruns of the monkeys, but the monkeys is an extremely odd show. Like, it is, even as a kid, you're like, what's going on? Like, it was really surreal. And props to them for like really going outside of the box and making something that is completely bizarre.
But I think it's like the studio system's trying to appeal to that counterculture before the counterculture goes too crazy into, you know, end up being like, you know, protests or advocates for stuff. It's the culture from the beatniks is going a certain way. So it's them trying to do the tame version of, you know, hippies and all that stuff, the G-rated version of stuff. And you see that with Batman. So Batman, for me, has a fine line where you get some of that, these psychedelic episodes. But for some reason, for Batman, it works for me. But it's a fine line, which I can't get over on some of the other shows. And it's hokey, and it's a double-edged sword because of Batman and it being such a phenomenon for, I think, like 3 seasons before it kind of lost it. Like, it was literally like overnight it lost its steam. By season 3, people were out of it, they had moved on, and then it kind of got canceled. But for those first 2 seasons, it being so popular, it was so influential that it kind of ruined a lot of really good shows, because every other show on the block was trying to imitate what they were doing to try to get the viewership and the audience to watch. So you have shows like Lost in Space, which started out as a pretty good serious with a little comedy sci-fi show, black and white. And then by the end of the season, the series, you know, it's just so campy and hokey. That's the shtick. Or Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Like, a lot of the Irwin Allen stuff starts off semi-serious, but by the end of the run, everybody's trying to do what Batman was doing. And I think the only person we know that held out was Gene Roddenberry with Star Trek. They wanted Star Trek to do that. And he was like, no, we can't go campy. We have to stay serious, to his credit, because, you know, I think that really is the Star Trek's benefit, that they didn't go hokey. I mean, there might be some episodes people think are silly. Whatever.
I mean, there's a hippie episode.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you do what you can, you know. I mean, every episode they go to Earth, oddly enough, or whatever. It seems like mid-century 60s America, doesn't it, Spock? You know, it's like, you know, I get that, but it's like, they were like, there was a lot of people who were chasing the tail of Batman and Robin because it was so popular. So that stuff kind of suffers.
I mean, it's Batman and Robin, the Batman 66 is a wonderful time capsule and a, like you said, kind of genius in its execution. They understood that, like you said, everybody had to play it serious for it to work. Like, and yes, like, ham it up. You know, Cesar Romero, Frank Gorshin. I mean, they're so over the top, but they're not trying to be funny. You know, it's not like mugging for the camera to like.
They're not trying to upstage each other.
They're playing a very large persona of those characters, but I mean, they are like crazy comic book characters, and they just understood that. And I mean, Adam West's delivery on that show is classic. But when you started talking about like Hollywood trying to appeal to like this counter, you know, generational thing that's going on. Something that, have you ever seen the movie, and this might be a movie you've actually seen because it stars Jackie Gleason, is Skidoo. Have you ever seen the movie Skidoo?
No, but I know of it.
It's like it's an LSD movie.
Yeah, it's out there.
Starring like Jackie Gleason, Groucho Marx, I think Frankie Avalon's in it, Mickey Rooney, I think, might be in it. Bob Balaban is in it, who I think we talked about it in regards to another thing, you know, on the show earlier. What's his name? Harry Nielsen, I think, does all the music, and I think he has like a very small cameo as like a prison guard. But this is it's a perfect bizarre time capsule of like Hollywood not knowing anything about hippies and the drug culture of the 60s, and creating a movie that's trying to appeal to it, but yet casting an entire cast of actors that hippies of the 60s probably wouldn't care about. It's like their parents' generations actors.
Yeah, the ones they were, the Bob Hopes and the people they were rebelling against. The people they didn't care about.
I mean, it's a wonderful watch. And I do encourage everybody to check it out because it's such a bizarre piece of like cinematic history. This, and it like encapsulate this whole era of like clueless studio heads not knowing how to appeal to a younger generation. Because let's face it, especially now, like when we were growing up, the biggest demographic for movies was like teenagers and people in their 20s would go to the movies. That's who everybody was really trying to appeal to for box office tickets. So it seems like they were trying to do that, but were completely clueless as to how to do it.
They were putting out these big budget musicals still. So you're still getting like these Dr. Doolittle, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and you know, for every great classic musical like a Mary Poppins or so, you're going to get ones that are forgettable that people don't watch anymore. So they were still trying to go for that. You have the weird Beach Bikini Bingo sect where they're doing those kind of movies with like the 60s people in bikinis that are very G-rated, but at the same time it's like you know, a lot of like Ozzie Nelson's son, Ricky Nelson, playing, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I'm a traveler. It's like you're trying to stay in the confines of the parental mentality of the conservative, like, you know, we don't want to show too much, but you're still trying to appeal to the kids.
But yeah,
with the beatnik or the, you know what I mean?
You're still, example. So, it's like this, the Ned Funicello and Frankie Avalon movies where like clearly it's for a teen audience of that day, but yet Buster Keaton is in all those movies.
Yeah. Or Don Rickles is running around. Well, he wasn't anybody at the time, but it's like you have these people, you know, and then you have like these weird montages or with whoever's showing up, you know, and then I guess the parents are supposed to, but then by the 60s comes into the full tilt. A lot of those older, it became like, you know, people like Sinatra was a square, Dean Martin or Bob Hope was a square. So the people they're putting into these movies at that point, like you're saying, like a Jackie Gleason or somebody, you know, maybe not a Buster Keaton. There's certain people that became cool again, but some of the people were like, you know, that this represented what they looked at as their parents' generation that they were rebelling against, certainly, you know, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So when they're putting them into these movies, like when you have Sinatra, like dressing up like in the Mamas and the Papas, singing like, you know, I'm leaving on a jet plane, you know, I mean, you know, light my fire. It's like, you know, it's just they're shooting at everything.
It's it's.
But the other thing,
go ahead. Sorry.
The last thing I want to just say about Batman. The other thing I love about it is just the colors, because they it's completely remastered and all that, so it just looks so crisp and beautiful, the color and all that and stuff like that. So aesthetically, it's amazing how everything looks on that show now.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it's such a weird time where you're. I mean, that's Sinatra's doing at that time. Perfect example of an older generation trying to figure out how to stay relevant.
Well, it's hard. I mean, you see that nowadays. I mean, it's like, that's why I used to be part of the crowd that would like kind of slag off the Al Pacinos, the De Niros of their world. But it's like these guys who accomplished so much in their youth that, you know, they hit whatever mile marker they wanted to artistically or whatever with roles in theater or in film or whatever. And then as they get older, people like, they're just taking roles. They haven't been good from this movie or whatever. It's like, yeah, but what do you expect? They're getting older. They got to keep working. They're being offered ridiculous amounts of a paycheck to do a movie. So they're paying the bills and they're doing the same thing, but they're still working. Where take that to back then, it's like, how do you stay relevant when the zeitgeist is completely changing culturally? Like John Wayne, you know, who didn't want to do like cop Dirty Harry or whatever, then he's doing like McHugh or Brannigan. It's like you have to follow the times. And a guy like Sinatra comes out in the big band era and then doesn't like the music of the day, but then he's trying to do different, like hippie or, you know, like rock versions of his standards to just try to. And then at some point, since it's so cyclical, they may come back into vogue later on. Sinatra then was popular again in the 80s. I mean, I think like New York, New York, the one that we always play at New Year's is him. That's like him from the 80s or whatever the recording is. It's like from the main event. It's like that era. Yeah. Like, you know, She Shot Me Down. It's not Sinatra from like the prime of Reprise or Capital era.
Oh, no. I mean, that song is from the movie, New York, New York, the Scorsese movie.
Yeah. So that's like, that's, what is that, 1979 or so? Yeah, 1977
like
or something?
70s or 80s, something like that.
Yeah. So it's that era of like the main event. So it's like, it's hard for them to, like you're saying, they're trying to stay relevant, trying to do stuff, especially in the early 60s, you know, where you're getting guys like, you know, Jerry Lewis or whatever, and like, you know, the people who develop themselves a shtick, who've fallen completely out of, not Jerry Lewis per se, but people who've fallen completely by the wayside of style because they've come and gone. Ozzie Nelson, the Nelsons, you know, Ricky Nelson becomes this phenomenon, who was basically the first pop star around the time of Elvis, but then he also was the first person who was, his dad was putting him on saying, yeah, you want to sing a song? You could sing a song. And they talk about how Ozzy and Harriet, you know, people still were, that generation was like, rock and roll is taboo. So, but Ricky Nelson had made his dad listen to rhythm and blues so much that he, because his dad was a band leader, played big band and was a singer, and his wife was a singer, Harriet, that he understood the music. He's like, oh yeah, you're right. This is actually pretty good if you listen to it. I understand the new, it's like trying to get your dad to listen to hip hop nowadays. And like, I understand the artisticness of it. So when his son was into Elvis and wanted to play, his dad gave him a forum on the TV. He said, yeah, okay, I'll give you a spot. And that got everybody into it. So instead of saying, he's like, can I play, I forget what song he plays. He plays an Elvis song. I think it's All Shook Up or what is, I forget the first song he plays. But Ozzy brilliantly, they're at like the functions, like they're at like a high school thing or whatever. And the band leader's playing, and the band leader knows Ozzy from the old days. And he's like, oh, I owe you a favor. He's like, hey, you mind if my son sings a song with you? And they're like, sure. And he says to him, hey, let's play that old rhythm and blues number, All Shook Up or something, or I forget what it is. Don't Be Cruel. And then he gets up, and Ricky does it. And then so it's bridging two gaps, and all of a sudden he's an international star singing. And all, you know, and it's the first, it's introducing rock and roll to the mainstream of the generation who were kind of standoffish because of Elvis shaking his hips on Sullivan or something like that, you know, and it ushers this whole thing in. But then within the middle 60s, he's out of vogue again because he's not cool because of what's going on until in the early 70s, he does a song called Garden Party, which takes him back because he went to the garden and he had long hair and people were pissed he was getting booed at because he was playing his new material and people wanted to hear his old stuff. And he's like, I've never had this happen. This is, why are they booing us? And it's because they wanted to hear the early stuff like Travel Man or whatever. So when he left, he was so kind of like upset about it. He wrote this song called Garden Party. And then, you know, I went to a garden party. Everybody was there. And then when he put that out, that became a huge hit again. And he had a revival in the 70s and got him back on the map, you know. And it's just like, it's crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think about the 60s. I mean, when the 60s, early 60s, we're talking about like Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. You know, that kind of music is popular, and you have,
or doo-wop even, or yeah, like the Shangri-Las, the, yeah, Spill, which is, Phil Spector,
which
stuff
is just a white version of that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's basically like it's the same kind of music. It's just a New Jersey white perspective on it compared to, but then by like 1969, 70, we got Black Sabbath. So like, you know, like that's, think about like how polar opposite like popular music and say rock and roll, because when you say pop music, I mean Sinatra's day, he was a pop star. That's what popular music was in like the 40s and the 50s. Show tunes were the popular music. That was pop music. If you had, that was pop radio, was listening to that. But it is a crazy, and a lot of that had to do with technology, the guitar, the evolution of guitar and amplifiers, and then, you know, younger white kids latching on to quote unquote black music, the blues. You know, that's when you get like the Rolling Stones and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, Cream. But like, you know, Beach Boys, Beatles, and then that evolution. It's a crazy decade for pop culture and music and the evolution of like, not just music, but things like you're talking about with Batman and Star Trek. I mean, going from all the Western television shows to, you know, Twilight, then through the Twilight Zone to, you know, by 72, we got Streets of San Francisco, you know, it's like
Night Gallery. Yeah. That's kind of like what that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is about. It's like, you know, the Leonardo DiCaprio character's aging out. He never made the transition to movies like the Eastwood or the McQueen did out of the Cowboys. And it's the culture's changing. He's still trying to hang on and be that person, but at the same time, he's fallen into the hole of being the villain of the week, or the, you know, the heavy of the week in these different other shows that are more popular, which happened to a lot of people.
Yeah, fascinating, you know, time period in pop culture. I mean,
crazy. Like
you can say, you can look at any decade and say that, you know, and find interesting things about that evolution. But
well, it's people like even, you know, vaudeville. They were like, radio ain't gonna last, and a lot of people jumped to radio, and then a lot of the vaudevillians died, you know, because they couldn't do it, you know. Or even from radio, people didn't want to jump to TV because they thought TV was a fad. And a lot of people say, you know, it was harder to do your show, your radio show on television, because then you had to show all the jokes as opposed to just imply them. You know, that became so much harder, so people couldn't make the transition. You have the black musicians, you're saying, like the you know, jazz, but certainly the blues guys playing these songs, and then the white guys like Pat Boone or Elvis playing them, and then they kind of fall out of favor, and we've talked about this, but then, I think, on the cast.
But then, like, the Rolling Stones brings Howlin' Wolf out to a TV show, you know, revives
them. Well, then that's the animosity that comes up, because then you have all these guys, you have the white guys in America playing the music, but then you have, like, the British guys listening to the original stuff, like the Muddy Waters or the Howlin' Wolfs, the John Lee Hookers, the Sun Houses. And then they're imitating that music. So, like, the first few Beatles albums, like the Live at the BBC, it's them just doing covers of Chuck Berry or whoever, Little Richard. And I guess Chuck Berry and Little Richard didn't have, because they were more rock and roll, they didn't have the lull. But, like, the what's his face? T-Bone Walker the guy who sings Shake, Rattle, and Roll, the big guy, what's his name? I forget his name. But, like, the Fats Dominoes and stuff, they kind of stayed in. But the more heavier blues guys, like the Muddy Waters or the Howlin' Wolf, had to have like day jobs on, not maybe Muddy, but the level below them, like the Little Walters or something, had to have a supplemental income. And that, we've said this, pissed them off, some of them, to a certain extent, because then when the British white kids are playing their music, and then because of them, the older guys are becoming more popular again, they're like, well, what the fuck? We've been around the whole time having to be a, like, Sun House was a porter on the New York Railroad for 30 years. And then it's not only till he's like in his 60s that he's on the college beatnik circuit doing his music again that we have all these recordings. And he's like of the era of, what's his face? Robert Johnson. You know, and these guys are older at that point, Skip James. And it's like, well, you know, we've been around for all these years, but nobody cared.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you take Chuck Berry's piano player, Johnny Johnson, when Hell, Rock and Roll, the Chuck Berry documentary came around in the 80s.
The Taylor Hackford movie, yeah.
And then when Clapton did his stint at the 24 nights at the Royal Albert Hall, where he did a block of blues nights, he wanted Johnny Johnson to play piano. This guy was a bus driver. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they took him off a bus and brought him to play, you know, because he had the time had passed him by. But then these,
yeah, but that's the sad thing. It's like these guys had become such pinnacles of, you know, such groundbreaking, laying foundations that people took the music. Either they lost because the back then the royalties were wrong, so they didn't get any money from the recordings that were hits, or their music was appropriated and recorded by other people and became more widely popular, and they didn't get the royalties because of that. And they had to have these day jobs as day laborers, be it bus drivers, you know, porters on trains or carpenters or whatever the hell, did it at night. Some of them survived, like the Hubert Summerlins or the Holland Wolves, Muddy Waters, B.B. Kings, by just touring incessantly. Or they had a big enough name like a Muddy Waters where they were able to, B.B. King, keep going. But even B.B. King wasn't mainstream until, I think, probably the early 70s. Jerry Reed had a Nashville country show where he'd put people on, and he put B.B. King on. And it's like you're introducing B.B. King to, like, mainstream audiences. You know, oh, wow, this guy's fucking awesome. But they've been around for so long. But you can understand why some of these people, not everybody, but some of these guys were kind of, used to joke about all this, but they were kind of disgruntled at the white English guys. Like, what the hell? You guys are on the scene playing our music, and we've been freaking.
The one thing that will never change is that, like, teenagers and people in the early, young people think they know everything. And so you hear them complain about how, you know, these guys just made money off of old black musicians. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I don't know who owned the publishing and stuff, but, like, you know, they paid royalties to cover those songs. You know what I mean? Like the fact that the Rolling Stones and guys like Clapton, the Yardbirds, all those guys, that
Elvis,
they covered all those songs. You know, that was putting money in the pockets of those guys, of Willie Dixon, who wrote all those songs and stuff. You know, like, it was
the guys who were lucky enough to own their own music, or the Chess, you know, Leonard and Phil Chess,
and
or,
then,
you know, those guys.
And then they've revived a lot of those guys' crews. The Howlin' Wolf London album and Electric Mud and all that stuff, like the Paul Fathers and Sons, the Paul Butterfield Blues Band with Muddy Waters. I mean, they gave them new life, new careers, new ability to tour again. So, like, yeah, they made money off of black artists, but they in return, those black artists made money again, which they
got them back into the public eye, which they weren't doing up in that time. And it became something that's just, you know, it's beneficial now for everybody in a sense that, you know.
And then when these guys would pass away, guys like Clapton and Keith Richards and Mick Jagger would, like, pay to have the body brought back to their families and paid to have them buried and put the tombstones and given tombs. Like, you know, they would leech into their pocket and take care of all those kinds of arrangements that their families couldn't afford to do.
Yeah, it's crazy, but, you know, guys like B.B. King or Bobby Bland who just toured for their entire lives. That was their life. Just tour. Like, I'm sure, same thing with Chuck Berry, Little Richard, you know, Aretha Franklin maybe. They would just tour. And, I mean, that's probably the same thing on the other
circuit. I mean, the Stones are in their 80s, man. I mean,
yeah, and they're still touring. They're just touring.
They're still at it. All these guys will do that. You don't know a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, that's
it. That's what you're used to.
Whenever you hear, like, somebody's going, like, I'm retiring from touring, it never takes, it never sticks, because they don't know what to do with themselves when they're when they're at home. You know, like, it's their, these guys have been touring since they were, like, 19.
Yeah, and that's all they know. Anyway. Yeah, Billy Joel and Elton John, all those guys, like, how many times I've heard they're going to retire, and then they're back out for another, you know. But then they get offered also obscene amount of money to come out of retirement, have a residency somewhere.
Yeah,
of course.
But,
why not?
They don't. Yeah, sure, why not? But they don't need it, you know.
No, they don't need it.
I mean,
still, I guess
Elton has the stipulation that so much of his money goes towards, like, AIDS charities and stuff that, you know. So he might keep doing it. Well, he says he's retired now, finally. But so, I mean, that guy gave away so much money towards, like, AIDS research and all that stuff.
And he has that whole music, he has that whole movie company, because they were doing all those. He did all those Romeo and Juliet, and he did, like, Sherlock Gnome, movies.
I think
are
his
from
husband,
the Elton John company.
I think his husband is a filmmaker, so they probably kind of.
Oh, that's what.
That.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Because they cover a lot of Elton John songs in there, and then it's hilarious because a lot of the voice actors in there are all very famous British people, you know. But it's amazing. I guess the topic of this rant we've been talking about is just the old is new and new is old and stuff and people. And then, you know, to close it off, it's like you're saying, I hear that now a lot of people talking about, you know, I guess what's big now is hip hop and all that, whatever you call it now, and them not respecting the elders of hip hop. And then there's a fight of the older people not, you know, and they're like, well, we don't need to know. We don't care about the older people because they didn't teach us anything. And they're like, what are you talking about? We founded everything here. So it's, you see that the history repeating itself of people you know, respecting their elders, and then the elders getting mad and saying, well, your shit is, it's not music now. And then, you know, well, yes, it is, you know.
Yeah, well, that's another thing that'll never change, man. You know, like, that's what they're saying about rock and roll, you know, like.
Yeah, or blues,
that's not, it's not music, you know, like, whatever. Yeah, everybody will always, some things will never change. It's told as time.
A tale as old as time.
Full circle.
Drinking your fucking wine. Anyway. So, yeah.
Dion, where can we get your books? What are your books called? And where can we get them, baby?
You can go get them on Amazon or wherever books are sold. One's called Blood in the Streets. The other one's called Moore's P.I., The Men from Ice House 4. Available paperback, ebook, audio book. Can get that there. You can find me on all the not all the social medias. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Instagram, you can probably still find me on MySpace if you look.
if you looked hard.
I'm not on TikTok anymore. I never was on TikTok. And then you can find me, I do acting on the side too. If you Google me, you can find me on stuff. One of my movies is now on Amazon. You can find that, Rent That Bad Boy. It's on YouTube actually for free too. You can find it there. How about yourself, Mr. Blake?
The book, Score to Death, Conversations with Some of Horror's Greatest Composers, and Score to Death, More Conversations with Some of Horror's Greatest Composers, are available on ebook and paperback from Amazon or from me directly at scoretodeath.com. Like Dion, I'm on at Score to Death on Twitter/X, Instagram, and Facebook. In the middle of making a documentary based on the book, Score to Death. And in the near future, there will be a record release. And once I can figure out how to get it to everybody who, all the backers for the documentary who are owed copies. But anyway, I'm Jay Blake, and with me as always is Dion. Thank you for listening. As Dion hinted last time, we do have a regular episode in the hopper that we're working on. Where we will cover a movie. But in the meantime, we're trying out this format.
As we said in the last episode, too, you know, if you guys have any topics, I mean, you know, we won't guarantee we'll talk about them, but if you want to suggest stuff, maybe there's stuff, you know, that is interesting that we could say, yeah, we can give us our 2 cents about, you know, The Outer Limits or One Step Beyond or, you know, Quantitative Ease. You know, I don't know. All right, let's get this over with. Let's turn this off. Until the next time.
Later.